Digital archivists trying to preserve Ukrainian heritage one website at a time. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace Tech. I'm Kimberly Adams. On this holiday, we're revisiting an episode we aired shortly after the beginning of Russia's invasion of Ukraine, a war that has disrupted and ended many lives and destroyed homes, infrastructure, whole communities. But at the time, the cultural heritage of Ukraine was also at high risk. Some Ukrainian museum websites went offline as the servers hosting them lost connections or were destroyed in attacks. To prevent that information and cultural memory from disappearing entirely, more than 1,000 archivists, programmers, and librarians volunteered to form a group called Saving Ukrainian Cultural Heritage Online, or SUCHO. They've been recording and archiving these websites before they go offline. Quinn Dombrowski is an academic technology specialist at Stanford University who's been working on this project.
Digital cultural heritage, I think, is an outgrowth of the way that, you know, the internet has worked, and people have developed websites for museums and for libraries and for archives that feature 3D models of particularly special objects, high resolution images, things like digitized texts and manuscripts that talk about the history of Ukraine. And we want to make sure that those materials continue to be available and continue to be presented in the way that their curator is intended.
So how are you archiving these pages?
We are sending URLs to the Internet Archive's Wayback Machine. We're also using an open source software called WebRecorder. And what WebRecorder does is it captures high fidelity versions of a website, just as if a person were navigating it. So with WebRecorder, we're able to capture virtual tours where you can walk through a museum. And these are things that are traditionally very difficult to capture through web archives, but WebRecorder allows us to do that.
So can you give an example of a website that's been archived as part of the project and how it looked before and how people might experience it now?
One of the sites that we've archived is the National Museum of Ukrainian Folk Decorative Art, a beautiful site with images of pottery and folk art and cultural manifestations, you know, dating back for centuries. And while the site is still up, thankfully, we have seen sites go down even shortly after we finish our archiving of them. And with the versions of the archive that we've created with WebRecorder, people will be able to navigate the site and browse through it and experience the content, the images, as if the site were live, even if it goes down and ends up being irretrievable.
What are some of the obstacles that you and your team and the volunteers are facing as you do this work?
Honestly, it's time. We have seen time running out on some of these sites with them going down shortly after they're archived. Another challenge, though, is technical, where our archiving crawls to the website where we load a whole bunch of pages at once and try to get through as much of the site as we can as quickly as possible. It's hard to differentiate that from a cyber attack from the server point of view. And so sometimes we have to, you know, slow down our rate of capturing pages to something that's more like a human level of browsing a site so that we don't get bounced from the site the way that they've sort of set up walls against like legitimate cyber attacks.
And why do you think it's important to do this work right now?
Right now, understandably, everyone on the ground is too busy fighting for their survival to be worried about things like servers and documents and, you know, things that are digital. There's a sense that, you know, they'll be preserved somewhere and they don't need to worry about those to the same extent. So we're trying to be another node in that network of backups and support for the Ukrainian people.
How do you want this archive to be used in the future?
We really hope that it's not used. Nothing would make us happier than for all of these sites to remain safe, remain on their original servers with their technical platforms. That said, if sites are destroyed, at least the way the site used to look is captured as an experience. But also we can extract some of the contents, you know, the images, the PDFs, to help them reconstruct the sites.
What's the risk if you don't do this work?
That it's gone. It could be gone in the sense of, you know, servers being destroyed, or worst case, if the Russian government comes in and takes over these servers, you know, there's the possibility of them, you know, subverting the message of these sites, making the argument that there isn't a, you know, Ukrainian national identity, that it's all Russian. reframing the history of Ukraine as just another province of Russia. And that's not something that we're okay with seeing happen.
Quinn Dombrowski is an academic technology specialist at Stanford University. And now for some related links. We recently reached out to Quinn Dombrowski and asked what Sucho has been working on since we conducted that interview last year. Their archiving work is ongoing, but they've also expanded their efforts. Here's Dombrowski with more.
Since we last spoke, Sucho volunteers have captured web archives of around 5,400 Ukrainian cultural heritage websites with over 51 terabytes of data. That's the total storage capacity of about 51 high-powered laptops. When we started the project, we really wanted to stay in the realm of the digital, helping Ukrainian cultural heritage workers keep their data safe. But what we learned was that less than 1% of materials in Ukrainian libraries, archives, and museums have been digitized. So even if we got every single website in its entirety, it would still be only a tiny fraction of their holdings. This led us to start the Sucho Equipment Fund. We've raised over 200,000 euros from 243 individuals, institutions, and organizations, and we've used it to send digitization equipment and computers to 34 libraries, archives, and museums. As the power grid has increasingly come under attack since the fall, we've also been sending high-capacity battery packs along with digitization equipment. These battery packs can be charged by a car or during the few hours of electricity, and they can help libraries continue to do the work they do best, serving as community hubs, which in this case means being a place where people can charge their devices. In the long term, our goal is to build capacity among Ukrainian cultural heritage workers so that digitization equipment can be a cornerstone of a future digital shift in Ukrainian libraries, museums, and archives after the war.
Sucho is also archiving one particular form of internet culture surrounding the war, memes, in order to document day-to-day developments of the conflict in a way that, according to Dombrowski, resonates with Ukraine's supporters around the world. We'll link to Sucho's work and their growing meme wall on our website, marketplacetech.org. We'll also include a link to a similar initiative from the Victoria and Albert Museum's ongoing program, Culture in Crisis. There you can find a portal to some other digital archive sites, like the Syrian Heritage Archive Project. Sasha Fernandez and Daniel Shin produced this episode. I'm Kimberly Adams, and that's Marketplace Tech. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.